Does anyone remember anything from yesterday's class? Yes.
Demigods were praising Krishna Lotus feet in many verses in different ways.
Yes. The praise of Krishna's lotus feet. What was the essence of the prayers? Definitely strongly connected to the lotus feet of Krishna.
Face to face.
Yes. And his soul purifying. And in text 24, spoken by Lord Brahma, he being the head of the demigod, sums up in one sense the essence of what the demigods prayed. They said, Yani te charitani sha manushya sadava kalo shunvata kirtayantas cha tirshantyan jasatama. My dear Lord, those pious and saintly persons who in the age of Kali hear about your transcendental activities and also glorify them will easily cross over the darkness of the age. So crossing over the darkness of the age of Kali doesn't only mean being liberated from Kali, but it means being able to engage in Krishna's service, even though Kali Yuga is such a terrible time. Why is it terrible? Why is Kali Yuga terrible? Most of you devotees are so exalted you don't even notice that Kali Yuga is so terrible. Just float upon it like a lotus flower floats upon the water.
The qualities of mankind are very much degraded.
Okay, so what's so bad about that?
And
wasting life. Wasting the life. So if we don't have an absolute reference point that life has a purpose and to develop our relationship with Krishna, love of Krishna is that purpose. If we don't have that as our reference point, that we're eternal and this is such an opportunity, if we don't have that as our reference point, then what's the difference how people spend their lives? So you might like to spend your life in goodness and that brings you happiness? Well then do it. And I like to spend my life acting like a dog, then I should do it. Because once life is over, you turn back into dust, the elements go and there's no meaning to the existence of the soul. So if that atheistical point of view is the reference point, then there's nothing one can say, practically speaking. One has to start at the beginning due to the depths of one's own conviction, convince others that no, it's not like that. There is a difference. How we act makes a difference because we're eternal. And we have souls. And we transmigrate. We travel from body to body. Forever we can be on that cycle of birth and death. And that birth and death cycle means suffering. Nalalida loka, samsara dava. It's a forest fire. It burns. And even the Buddhists, the contemporary Buddhists, who don't believe in the eternality of the soul, but they do believe in transmigration. They're sort of stuck with that one. And they believe, of course, that material existence needs suffering. And that, in one sense, that's one of the main differences between the spiritual paths born in India and the spiritual paths born in the Middle East. The spiritual paths born in the Middle East, they seem to think that life, or actually I wouldn't divide it in that way. I would divide it into contemporary practitioners of spiritual life and more ancient practitioners of spiritual life. The contemporary practitioners of spiritual life think that life is meant for enjoyment. And it's actually possible to enjoy, to situate yourself in a way that you can enjoy in this material world. And that's what your life is meant for. And therefore it's so frustrating when you get in the way of my enjoyment, because I am meant to enjoy. This is the contemporary idea. So what? How frustrated contemporary people are, because they don't understand the nature of the material world. It's so obvious. So obvious in a prison where everyone is condemned to death. It's death row. How can you enjoy? Only by the deepest of illusions can you enjoy. Illusion means forgetting what's going on. You can hear the dogs out there enjoying. If you look out the window, you can hear, you can watch the monkeys enjoying it. They're always afraid. They're trying to find something to eat, and then the big monkey comes, and everyone runs and goes, but he doesn't care, because he's the biggest monkey in around. It's just struggling. And just like these dogs, what happens when dogs start fighting or monkeys start fighting? All the dogs in the neighborhood come over, all the monkeys, they want to find out what's going on, and they come and they try to join in. That's their pleasure. And from our point of view, we don't see it as pleasure at all.
Yeah, very well synchronized.
Really? Yes, we've that cost us 30 rupees to get that going.
The other day when we had the Mahaprabhu's verse, there was kirtan.
Yeah.
Just
see.
And when we had the South India glories, we had the South India.
And today, what are we going to get? Just wait and you'll find out. No, this is just the beginning. We've organized other thrilling things. So the demigods left. Lord Brahma has informed Krishna that basically the reason for his advent, according to the understanding of Lord Brahma, has been fulfilled, and now he can leave if he so desires. And Krishna's response to Brahma's request was, yes, but there's one other point that has been begun but has not yet been completed, and that's the removal of the Yadu dynasty from this world. So then Brahma leaves and all the demigods accompany him. Now text 33. Thereafter, the pastime moves on. The personality of Godhead observed that tremendous disturbances were taking place in the holy city of Dwarka. Thus the Lord spoke to the assembled senior members of the Yadu dynasty as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Our dynasty has been cursed by the Brahmins. Such a curse is impossible to counteract. And thus great disturbances are appearing everywhere around us." So Krishna, of course, as the all-powerful Supreme Lord, can counteract anything he wants. But this is how he's speaking. "My dear respected elders, we must not remain any longer in this place if we wish to keep our lives intact. Let us go this very day to the most pious place of Prabhakshetra, Prabhas. We have no time to delay." This is a short comment by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. We'll read that and then read the comment of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and other things. So Krishna, "So let Dwarka remain with my eternal associates. The Devatas had previously entered the Yadus unseen by others. By my power of yoga, I will extract them from the Yadus and take them to Prabhas. I will make them fight there by my Maya and send them to Swarga. And I, in my form as the son of Vaikuntha, and as other forms as well who emerge within me, will go to Vaikuntha, above Brahmaloka, and other spiritual abodes. In my complete form, I with my associates will remain eternally in Dwarka." This is what the Lord was thinking. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, this is from the purport to on the third paragraph in the purport to text 35, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has made the following important comments on this verse. Prabhas is a famous holy place located near the Vedaval railway station within the region of Junagadh. That's in Gujarat. Raise your hand if you've been to Prabhas. I've been to. What did you think of Prabhachitra?
Nice
place. There's a place of where Balaram left. And did you see, what is it called? Balki Tirtha? Quite near there, yes? Where Krishna was sitting underneath the banyan tree.
And the peepal tree where
ceremony. And near, it's quite near the Somnath temple. Do you know that when the Somnath temple, that was one of the first things that that India did after its independence? It rebuilt the Somnath temple. And the Somnath temple, that whole area was inhabited by Muslims, and they removed everyone, and they rebuilt this temple. And this temple had been destroyed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago by the first of the, it was the Mughal or the Afghani raiders. Who was it? Maybe Muhammad Ghazi or someone. Yeah, he came, and they fought for weeks and weeks. And the Hindu king at that time, I don't remember what it was, he was very powerful, and they held them off, and over so many thousands, 40,000, 50,000 people were killed to defend the area. And in a Muslim, there was a Muslim chronicler, he wrote it in his diary. He was one of the invaders, and he wrote what he saw. And he said that it was so opulent. It wasn't the chaotic and so much poverty and things like that. It wasn't in anything like that. It was completely opulent. And he said in the middle of the temple was a Shiva Linga suspended in the air. Yeah, and this was what the... Yeah. Huh? Well, he didn't say suspended just like that, but he just suspended in the air. So when the modern people look at it, they say, oh, it must be magnets, because how can something be suspended in the air like that? That's what they say. But yeah, it was so amazing. So amazing. It's still an amazing temple. So Prabhas is a famous holy place located in the region of Junagadh. In chapter 30 of the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is written that after hearing the words of Sri Krishna, so this is a summary of the departure of Krishna, which is described in the 30th and the 31st chapters. After hearing the words of Krishna, the Yadavas went to the mainland from the island city of Dwaraka by means of boats, and then traveled to Prabhas in chariots. At Prabhachetra, they drank a beverage called Maireya and became engaged in a mutual quarrel. A great battle ensued, and killing each other with hard stalks of cane, the members of the Yadu dynasty acted out the pastime of their own annihilation. Lord Sri Krishna, manifesting his forearm form, sat down under a peepal tree, placing his left foot, the heel of which was colored red like the red Kokanada lotus, upon his right thigh. A hunter named Jara, watching from the shore of the ocean of Prabhas, mistook the Lord's red-colored foot to be the face of a deer and shot his arrow at it. At the base of that same peepal tree under which Lord Krishna had sat, there is now a temple that's called Balki Tirtha. 1 mile away from the tree on the seashore is the Veera Prabhanjana Mat, and it is said that from this point the hunter Jara fired his arrow. In the conclusion to his work, Mahabharata Tatparaja Nirnay, Srimadvacharyapad, has written the following purport to the Moshalya Lila, the disappearance pastimes. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in order to bewilder the demons and ensure that the word of his own devotees and of the brahmanas be maintained, created a body of material energy into which the arrow was shot. But the Lord's actual forearm form was never touched by the arrow of Jara, who is actually the Lord's devotee, Bhrigu Rishi. In a previous age, Bhrigu Muni had placed his foot on the chest of Lord Vishnu in order to counteract the offense of improperly placing his foot on the Lord's chest. Bhrigu had to take birth as a degraded hunter. But even though a great devotee willingly accepts such a low birth, the personality of Godhead cannot tolerate seeing his devotee in such a fallen condition. Thus, the personality of Godhead arranged that at the end of Dwapara Yuga, when the Lord was winding up his manifest pastimes, his devotee Bhrigu, in the form of the hunter Jara, would cast the arrow into a material body created by the Lord's illusory energy. Thus the hunter would become remorseful, gain release from his degraded birth, and go back to Vaikuntha Loka. Therefore, to please his devotee Bhrigu, and to confuse the demons, the Supreme Lord manifested his Moshalya Lila at Prabhas, but it should be understood that this is an illusory pastime. 36. And this is clear, certainly, in the 31st chapter of the Bhagavatam. Because we can't just believe the part where he was shot with the arrow and not believe the rest of the pastime that's described. And then he goes, anyway, we shall hear. He leaves in a wonderful way. Once, so Krishna's continuing to speak the glories of Prabhas in three verses. Once the moon was afflicted with consumption because of the curse of Daksha. But just by taking bath at Prabhachetra, the moon was immediately freed from his sinful reaction and again resumed the waxing of his phases. So to get free from the curse, we go to Prabhas, because this happened in the past, freedom from the curse, from curses. By bathing at Prabhachetra, by offering sacrifice there to placate, to please the forefathers and demigods, by feeding the worshipable brahmanas with various delicious foodstuffs, and by bestowing opulent gifts upon them as the most suitable candidates for charity, we will certainly cross over these terrible dangers through such acts of charity, just as one can cross over a great ocean in a suitable boat. Sukadeva Goswami said, O favorite son of the Kurus, thus advised by the personality of Godhead, the Yadavas made up their minds to go to that holy place, Prabhachetra, and thus yoked their horses to their chariots. My dear king, Uddhava was a constantly faithful follower of Lord Krishna. Upon seeing the imminent departure of the Yadavas, hearing from them of the Lord's instructions, and taking note of the fearful omens, Uddhava approached the personality of Godhead in a private place. He bowed down with his head at the lotus feet of the Supreme Controller of the universe, and with folded hands, he addressed him as follows. In the purport, it describes Jiva Goswami's comment that there cannot actually be any disturbances in the Lord's own abode, and that we can actually understand what is truly going on by hearing the comments of the acharyas. 42. Uddhava said, O my Lord. So from 42 to 49, which is basically the end of the chapter. The chapter ends on 50. Uddhava will speak. And then Krishna's reply is the Uddhava Gita, starting in the next chapter, in chapter 7. So Uddhava knows who Krishna is. He is dear to Krishna. He's completely devoted to Krishna. He's the best of devotees. And he's so intelligent. So with his intelligence, he's pierced through the drama that Krishna has put into place by the omens. And Uddhava, of course, knows of the curse that the Brahmins gave. So Uddhava said, O my Lord, O Supreme God amongst all demigods, Real piety is invoked simply by hearing and chanting your transcendental glories. So there's that point again. Hearing and chanting. And one great gift of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura was that he expanded our understanding of what Sankirtan is, what Kirtan is, to include the preaching of Krishna consciousness. Because after all, preaching means the glorification of the Lord. And also those things that are connected to the preaching, they're also none different from it. So, and everything that could be used in the hearing and to spread the hearing and chanting, even the book publication, the book distribution specifically, this is none different from spontaneous love for Krishna, if it is done in a spontaneous way for Krishna's glorification. And Srila Prabhupada had fully understood that mood and the appropriateness of acting in that way. And especially in this age of Kali, where everyone's minds are so disturbed and everyone is unlucky, tending towards to be misguided and has crooked intelligence, and everyone's mind is so disturbed in Kali Yuga, to engage our natures, conditioned as they are, in the service of the Sankirtan movement is so practical. So practical. Because if it was only Nirjan Bhajan, as Mahaprabhu, practically speaking, performed in his final years, then there would be no spreading of Krishna consciousness, and practically speaking, in Kali Yuga, there would be no practicing of Krishna consciousness. So the preaching, the compassionate spreading of transcendental knowledge, and the compassionate and humble requesting of the souls of Kali Yuga to take to the chanting of Krishna's holy names, Kalo Nasteva 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 Gatyanayata. This is also kirtan. Of course it's kirtan. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura lamented that a book, one of the Goswami's books, was locked up within India, and the world had not understood it. Do you know what book that was that he lamented? Yeah, it was Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Such an on one level, such an esoteric book. He wasn't the Bhagavad Gita, which in one sense is easier to comprehend. But the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which speaks about the personal dealings between God and his beloved devotees in Braja. He said this should not be locked up in India. And he said that it is the duty of those who have taken their birth in India, especially, to preach. They should make their lives successful and then preach. And then spread the wealth of India, distribute it with a fully generous spirit throughout the world. So Uddhava said, O Supreme God, amongst all the demigods, O Supreme God, amongst all the demigods, real piety is invoked simply by hearing and chanting your transcendental glories. My Lord, it appears that you will now withdraw your dynasty, and thus you yourself will finally give up your pastimes within this universe. You are the supreme controller and the master of all mystic power. But although you are fully capable of counteracting the Brahmana's curse against your dynasty, you are not doing so, and your disappearance is imminent. Because you are the supreme controller, you have all mastered, you are the master of all mystic powers, not have mastered them, but you, it's inherently, you are the master of all siddhis, and yet you are not stopping this from happening. So yes, we can say this is due to respect the words of the brahmanas, but yet these are your relatives. So it must be concurrent with your desire. This is my conclusion. And what I understand your desire is to fulfill the curse of the Brahman, to remove the Yadu dynasty from this world, and then you yourself will leave. We'll read from about a third of the way, or two-fifths of the way down in the purport. Krishna is called Punya Shravana Kirtana because when by his internal mystic potency he exhibited his human-like activities, the Lord stimulated the writing of innumerable Vedic scriptures about his pastimes. Thus persons who would be born in the future, like ourselves, would be able to hear and chant about the Lord's activities and also go back home, back to Godhead. So the result of hearing and chanting about the Lord's activities is going back to Godhead. But there are steps in between hearing and chanting and then the actual going back to Godhead. Why are there steps in between? Because our consciousness, we, the soul, with its consciousness, must become attuned in harmony with the consciousness of everyone in Goloka Vrindavan. In other words, they all love Krishna. They are filled with prema of Krishna, for Krishna. And we cannot go until we become purified and have such fine consciousness like the residents of Vrindavan have, fine, perfected consciousness with no adulteration. So what does adulteration mean?
Speculation.
No. You are not allowed to talk, you came late. You have to sit in the corner. You're almost in the corner. You can... No, it's okay, that's a corner. You're sitting beneath Giriraj. He still likes you. Adulterated means contaminations or additional elements, because within the consciousness, all the additional elements are the unwanted material desires, all the anartas, all the things that actually aren't us, all the desires that cause us to travel from one birth to the next, adishtayam manastayam visha upasevate. All those have to be removed so that we can be suitable for being with the residents of Vrindavan in the service of Krishna. So the process of Krishna consciousness from Shraddha to Prema is the process of purifying consciousness. And all the restrictions that we have in Krishna consciousness, it's not exactly like they're sins, and because we're sins, God is making us suffer. It's the sin is that we're separated from Him. By engaging in materialist activities, self-centered, selfish material activities in relationship with our body and using the material world for our pleasure, those activities entangle us in desires that disallow us from having the subtle consciousness, the subtle and pure consciousness, the fine and rarefied, loving, prema-filled consciousness that is suitable for being in the spiritual world. So the purport continues. Having ensured the transcendental bliss and liberation of all his devotees, and even those who would be born in the future, Krishna decided the time had come for him to leave this material universe. Uddhava could understand the Lord's desire, and he said to Krishna, "You have instructed the Yadavas to counteract the Brahman's curse by taking bath at Prabhachetra. But how could mere bathing in a holy place be of greater value than seeing you, the personality of Godhead, face to face. Since the Yadavas are always seeing your transcendental form, and since you are the Supreme Lord, what is the use of their taking bath in a so-called holy place? Therefore, you obviously have some other purpose. If you actually wanted to counteract the curse, you could simply say, let this curse not act, and the curse would immediately be neutralized. Therefore, you must be preparing to leave this universe, and that is why you have not counteracted the curse. So fine intelligence, fine discrimination allowed Uddhav to pierce to the Lord's intention. He continues, O Lord Keshava, my dear master, I cannot tolerate giving up your lotus feet for even for a fraction of a moment. I urge you to take me along with you to your own abode. Oh, my dear Krishna, your pastimes are supremely auspicious for mankind and are an intoxicating beverage for the ears. Tasting such pastimes, people forget their desires for other things. So if the people, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur comments on the reason why Uddhava is saying that, is that if people of this world become intoxicated and addicted to the beverage of hearing of your auspicious pastimes, and if they are so addicted to hearing of your pastimes and being addicted, they cannot give up that hearing, associating with you through your pastimes. Well, how can I give it up? I'm addicted to your association. I've been addicted to your association for so many years. Tens and tens and tens and tens of years. So if they can't give up your pastimes, how can I? I can't be in this world without you. So you're leaving, so I humbly request you to take me with you. I don't want to be in this world without you. Srila Jiva Goswami, commenting on from a Bhaktivinoda Samita Sindhu verse, he says, it's 163, that the real benefit of devotional service is attraction to the Lord. And when we get attracted to that which we have a taste for, we become attached, that's ruchi. We become attached to that which we have a taste for and that which attracts us. So this is what we are supposed to attain through practicing devotional service, or the stage beyond that, kriti sadhya bhavetsa saranadavi nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatta middhi sadhyata, which means that the purpose of performing the different sadhanas is the sadhya, is the goal of bhava bhakti, or being fully in the shelter of the Lord's internal energy, the gift of that shelter, as opposed to remaining in the Lord's sheltered, tiny jiva soul sheltered by his external energy. So we want to become attracted to Krishna. So Uddhava has just said that people, by hearing of your pastimes, same point again, that people become attracted to you, intoxicated by your pastimes, addicted to your pastimes, which are parama mangala, and they are piyush, nectar for the ears, and having tasted that, they reject all other things. So if we wish to move forward, which means giving up also the anchor of our material desires, very much the process is this hearing the pastimes of Krishna and chanting the names of Krishna. In 45, my dear Lord, you are the Supreme Soul and thus you are most dear to us. We are your devotees And how can we possibly reject you or live without you for a moment? Whether we are lying down, sitting, walking, standing, bathing, enjoying recreation, eating, or doing anything else, we are constantly engaged in your service. In 45, I think there's a comment by Vishwanath. No. And then there's an interesting verse. So we're always engaged in your service. And then, Twaya upabhukta shagganda vasu lankara charchita uchista bojino dashas tavamayam jayamahi. Simply by decorating ourselves, well, we'll just go through the words by words, the upabhukta, twayi. The shrug, the garlands, the ganda, the fragrances that have been already enjoyed by you, the garments, vasha, alanka, the ornaments, charchita, that have adorned you, uchista, the remnants of your food, bojina, by eating the remnants of your food, we, your servants, tava mayam jayemahi, We will certainly, indeed, cross over the ocean of the illusory energy, tavamaya, of your maya. So, here's the translation here. Simply by decorating ourselves with the garlands, the fragrant oils, the cloths, and the ornaments that you have already enjoyed, and by eating the remnants of your meals, we, your servants, will indeed conquer your illusory energy. So this Srila Jiva Goswami points to this verse to show that Uddhava was not seeking liberation, because liberation for someone like Uddhava is easily accomplished with no effort, just by engaging in this process. What is the process? Accepting the remnants of the Lord in these different forms, in the forms of garlands, in the forms of his cloth paraphernalia, in the forms of his prasadam, bojino, dashas, in the forms of his prasadam. So just by accepting these things in the proper consciousness, one transcends material existence. This is the process of bhakti. It is a process that evokes the Lord's mercy. So different from all those processes that are described in the Bhagavad Gita, that will be described in the Uddhava Gita, the mystic yoga processes, the process of karma yoga, the process of jnana yoga. This is the process of Uddhava, right here. And keep this in mind as we hear the Uddhava Gita, because Krishna has something in mind, but Krishna is very grave and he doesn't speak directly his mind. But this is the process of Uddhava. It is full of devotion. It is unadulterated devotion. It is pure devotion to Krishna. It is fully dependent upon Krishna. It is full surrender to Krishna. And what does the soul do? As he's fully surrendered to Krishna, he's serving. Why is he serving? Because he understands that this is who I am. Jiv Krishna Das Avishvas. That I am a servant of Krishna. This is who I am. I'm not even an eternal spirit soul. Well, that's who I am, but that's only part of who I am. That's only a partial definition of who I am. I am Krishna's eternal spirit soul. I am Krishna's servant. I am Krishna's servant. And I surrender fully to that consciousness, to that engagement. I am Krishna. And this consciousness, this bhakti consciousness, this consciousness where bhakti truly begins, allows one to feel part of Krishna, that I'm one of Krishna's. My shelter is Krishna and I am Krishna's. And feeling, and then one understands that Krishna has accepted me as his own. And therefore, a surrendered devotee, he can be fearless in this world. He could be fearless. Every once in a while, one reads about the son of some dictator in some country. It was like that in I can think of a few countries in Iran and another country I can't remember. But the son of the dictator. Of the king or the dictator, he would act in completely whimsical ways, doing terrible things. If he didn't like someone, he'd shoot them, and you know, or whatever. He'd be doing all kinds of things because he understood that he was always under the protection of his father. He would do the most terrible things, but the devotee, understanding, he was fearless. That's the point. He was fearless even when acting in such ways that he would naturally, everyone would be afraid of doing those things because there would be retribution, there would be revenge. But he was fearless because he knew he was under his father's protection. So not that a devotee in any way does things that are unpleasing or displeasing to his Lord, but he's fearless because he's in the Lord's service and he's surrendered to that and he's placed himself. Surrender in essence means placing oneself under the protection of the Lord. This is the glorious and natural state of consciousness of the soul, and therefore a soul in that way is Vishvapurna Sukhayate, and therefore to learn this, one sometimes takes risks, even on behalf of the Lord, just to place oneself in his service under his protection. Therefore, etan sa ashtaya paratmanishtam. The Advanti Brahmana, becoming fully renounced. What does it mean to be fully renounced? It means to give up all the false shelters. Otherwise, there's no purpose in becoming renounced in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. It's just so that the soul becomes trained to not take shelter of those things that we typically take shelter of in this world. We avoid the actions to take shelter of the things that the false ego, that feed the false ego, that makes the false ego feel strong and proper and the enjoyer. So the renunciant renounces false ego food, basically. And what happens when you renounce false ego food? What happens if you don't feed anything? It becomes thinner and thinner and thinner, and then katam hokya, finished, dies. But when we try to be renounced, the false ego will kick and it will scheme, and it will make its plans, and it will be tricky as anything to keep getting fed. So aitansa ashtaya paratmanishtam means that then I don't want to take any so serious about Krishna consciousness that I refuse to take shelter of anything but the Supreme Lord, the Paramatma, the Paraatma. Very serious. So this is the meaning of this, that so much Shraddha is there, so much faith, so much Nishta is there, fixedness in faith, that I only have Krishna as my shelter. I don't need anything else, I don't want anything else. Nothing else will protect me. Nothing else can protect me. So I want to learn this. I want to hold so tightly to Krishna. And then we take the principle of Rupa Goswami. So there is. So in previous times, especially the followers of Mahaprabhu and sannyasis anywhere in the Vanashrama order, they would be very detached. No, I remember when we first heard about sannyas indirectly from Prabhupada, but from Prabhupada, they would not touch fire. They would never cook. They would, no cloth that was sewn. No possessions. Only Mahaprabhu, after he took sannyas, stick in water pot. And then Srila Bhakti said, Anta Saraswati Thakur, he turned the world upside down, the Vaishnava world, by riding into Radhakund in a car as a sannyasi, showing and wearing shoes, and sannyasis never wearing shoes, never any conveyance, never traveling in any way other than in foot. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, following strictly Rupa Goswami, Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagya, detached renunciation, meaning that everything belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. Renunciation of the spirit of sense enjoyment, but not renunciation of the things that belong to Krishna. How could one renounce the things that belong to that don't belong to oneself? One can only renounce that which belongs to oneself. What would you like? Okay, it's just now coming. Are you going to sit in or out today?
I'm going to sit out. I just...
Two. Yeah, it's two. Should we open the windows? Would that help?
No, please.
Huh? Okay, we won't get involved in this one. Are you happy sitting outside, if we speak loudly?
I'm happy if I can hear you.
Okay, we'll try our best to rant and rave loudly instead of quietly. No, it's all part of the excitement. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur completely renounced. And Prabhupada made this point so strongly by saying, utility is the principle. What comes next after that? Purity is the force. If we have utility as the principle without purity being the force, then utility will be simply in the service of the false ego. And I will be tricky. And in the name of utility and in the name of using everything in Krishna's service, I will what? Enjoy. I will use that which is meant for Krishna, for me. So this is dangerous land to walk on, actually. So one should take what one needs, and everything should be used for the pleasure of Krishna. So here's the purport to this verse. Such a wonderful verse. Taya upabukta shraganda vasholankara charchita uchista bojino dasas tavamayam jaimahi. The process of holding on to Krishna is the process of becoming free from the material world by being showered with his mercy. and that's being fixed as his servant. So different from the other processes. The others are ascending processes. One needs such purity, such determination, such will, so much of so many things. Non-interaction, complete self-dependence. By my power, I will do that. But this process is quite different. This process of bhakti. Purport. It is clear from this verse that Uddhav is not approaching the Lord for liberation from the illusory energy. As a personal, confidential associate of Lord Krishna, Uddhava was undoubtedly a completely liberated soul. He is praying to the Lord because he cannot bear the thought of living without Krishna even for a moment. This feeling is called love of God. Uddhava is addressing the Lord as follows. Even if your illusory energy tries to attack us, my Lord, we will very easily conquer her by our powerful weapons, which are the remnants of your food, clothes, ornaments, and so on. In other words, we will easily conquer over Maya by Krishna prasadam and not by useless speculation and mental concoctions. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, I pray in this way since I cannot give you up. I do not pray because of fear of Maya. If Maya attacks us, we will conquer Maya by becoming strong with these weapons of your remnants, not by jnana or other process. And he, Uddhav, was so famous as the most intelligent and even sometimes considered a jnani. But that's not where his faith was. His strength was only in his devotion. I don't have the proper paper with me, but in the Nectar Devotion, 27. Chapter. Look up the accepting of flower garlands. I can't remember what chapter it is, but it's in the. I have it written down as 9. Yeah, Nectar of Devotion 9. Maybe it's chapter 9. And Mahaprabhu, these were things that were stressed very much by Mahaprabhu. Huh? As long as I'm near the microphone, I'll do it. Accepting flower garlands. The next instruction, this is part of consideration of devotional principles. In this connection, the next instruction is one should put on flower garlands which are offered to the deity. So this was stressed by Mahaprabhu. He would accept the flower garlands of the Lord. Otherwise, it wasn't so much stress prior to that. In this connection, in the 11th canto, 6th chapter, verse 46, that happens to be the one we've just read, Uddhava says to Krishna, my dear Krishna, I've taken things that you have used and enjoyed, such as garlands of flowers, scented oils, garments and ornaments, and I eat only the remnants of your foodstuff because I am your menial servant. So therefore, I am sure that I shall not be attacked by the spell of the material energy. The purport of this verse is that for any person who simply follows these rules and regulations of decorating the body with the marks of tilak or Gopi Chandan or sandalwood pulp, and who puts on the garlands which are offered to Krishna, there is no question of being conquered by the spell of material energy. At the time of death, there is no question of such persons being called by the constables of Yamaraj. Even if one does not accept all the Vaishnava principles, but still takes the remnants of foodstuff offered to Krishna or Krishna Prasad, he will gradually become qualified to rise to the platform of a Vaishnava. He doesn't meet. This is verse Nectar of Devotion, chapter 9, accepting flower garlands. Huh? Oh, the verse is 46 in the 6th chapter of the 11th canto. Whoops. There. Nope. I'm so used to a touch screen now. I'm becoming bewildered by lack of touching. Look in 27 and 36 too. I have notes on for that. Yeah. 27 and 36.
Also speaking about flower garlands?
Well, just rolling on the ground. Yeah. In the third canto, first chapter, verse 32 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Vidura inquires from Uddhav, "My dear friend, is Akura in an auspicious condition? Not only is he a learned scholar and sinless, but he's also a devotee of Krishna. He has such ecstatic love for Krishna that have seen him rolling upon Krishna's footprints in the dust as if bereft of all senses." Similarly, one gopi gave a message to Krishna that Radharani, because of her separation from him and because of her enchantment with the aroma of his flower garlands, was rolling on the ground, thereby bruising her soft body. So that was the point there, that if one's consciousness accepts the flower garlands of the Lord in the proper way, that one can be completely ecstatic. Because the flower garlands of Krishna, they are Krishna. So even Radharani, just by smelling the flower garland. And one more, 27. Oh, we just had 20. Was 36? I'm not sure what this one is, but it... Yeah. One of the close associates of Krishna, Uddhava, is considered the best. The following is the description of him. His body is blackish, like the color of? No. The Yamuna River, that's what's used here. and it is similarly as cool. He is always decorated with flower garlands, first used by Lord Krishna. And he is dressed with yellow silk clothing, that is also Krishna's remnants. And when Uddhava came to Vrindavan and the gopis saw him, first they thought it was Krishna himself because he was wearing all of Krishna's clothes. His two arms are just like the bolts of a door. His eyes are just like lotus flowers. And he is the most important devotee among all the associates. Let us therefore offer our respectful obeisances into Uddhava's lotus feet. 47. Change of topic, but it's in conjunction with this topic because here's a different process. Naked sages who seriously endeavor in spiritual practice, who have raised their semen upward, who are peaceful and sinless members of the renounced order, they attain the spiritual abode called Brahman. From the purport towards the end, Uddhava is pointing out that unlike the impersonalists and the meditators, the pure devotees very easily cross over the illusory energy because they are totally attached to the lotus feet of Krishna. So this is what devotional service means. It means becoming attached to Krishna. And how does hearing and chanting about Krishna fit into the process of becoming attached to Krishna? These are some of the main methodologies of becoming attached to Krishna. Rukmini Devi heard about Krishna one time from Narada Muni and fell in love with him. For us, we need constant kirtaniya sadahari, constantly chanting and hearing and engaged in Krishna's service. And when we do service for Krishna, we should consciously connect it to Krishna, so we don't have a dualistic mind. This is my service, or this is my work, and this is my devotional activity. The two must be connected. We sweep the floor of the temple, because we use that as an example quite typically, because Prabhupada many, many times mentioned that sweeping the floor of the temple is as good as deity worship. So that means that nothing except our false ego and impure consciousness can stop us from approaching Krishna. We can find service, we can find something to do, but the point being that we should connect what we are doing with Krishna, and if we are so sincere, everything that we do that is not connected with Krishna we will reject, because it stops us from having that fine consciousness that is required to be with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. So that type of sincerity is required. Full sincerity, complete sincerity. And when we... Yeah, that is what's required. And that sincerity also comes about. Because sincerity means intensity of the desire. This is what I want. This is what I really want. This is what only what I want. So when our desire is intense, tatiraloyam api mulam ekalam, that will be what we want. When our desire is insipid, what does insipid mean? Huh? Insipid means pale, weak. Basically weak. If our desire is weak, then naturally our consciousness will be amalgamated with so many material desires, filled with them. So if we don't hear and chant, our desire will become weak. And Prabhupada has said this, especially there's one purport where Prabhupada speaks about this in the 19th chapter of Madhyalila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, when describing the Bhakti Lata Bija, that we have to keep in touch, in contact with the hearing chanting process. So Uddhava is pointing out that unlike the impersonalists and meditators, the pure devotees can very easily cross over the illusory energy because they are totally attached to the lotus feet of Krishna. So it sounds so simple. The pure devotees can very easily cross over, but just all you have to do is be a pure devotee, and then you can very easily cross over, because a pure devotee is fully surrendered. A pure devotee is one who is practicing pure devotional service. And what is pure devotional service? Anya bilasita sunyam gana kamara navrita anukulena krishna anashilanam bhakti uttama. This is Srila Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service, that there's no desires on the level of karma or jnana, and serving Krishna in a favorable mood, meaning wanting to please him. Lord Krishna is always transcendental. And if one is firmly attached to the Lord's lotus feet, then he is also transcendental. The causeless mercy of Krishna is more valuable than millions and billions of years of one's own struggling and straining. But unless we do our, unless we struggle and strain, we don't attract the causeless mercy of Krishna. Of course, Krishna can do what he wants. But our point, our effort is to try, sincerely try our best. That is our business in the equation. But yet, it is necessary, but it is not sufficient, our hard work. And what is fully sufficient, and what surrender really is the soul finally saying, okay, Krishna, I'm yours. I'm not going to do everything by my own power anymore, and I'm yours, I'm yours. How can I serve you? It's a giving of the soul to Krishna. Sarvadamam pratyaja, mame kam, sharanam. What does sharanam mean? Huh? Yeah, placing oneself under the shelter of Krishna as his servant. And that point should not be underestimated. Because who we are, and Sharanagati means returning to our natural position of servant of Krishna, returning to that consciousness that Krishna, I am your servant, and you are my Lord and Master. And from that platform, then further developments of bhakti. totally attached to the lotus feet of Krishna. And it begins with what? Shraddha. Of course, it must begin with yes, Krishna is there. And he's all powerful and all merciful. And therefore, if I become attached to his feet, to his service, and to his, everything connected with him, his dham, his devotees, his, this is all tadiya, tadiyanam samacharam. Everything connected with Krishna becomes of the quality of Krishna, just like iron placed in the fire takes on the qualities of fire. In this age, one can achieve the mercy of Lord Krishna by constantly chanting his holy name, as recommended in the Shastras, Harinama, 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 Rikevalam, Kaloa, Nasteva, Nasteva, Gatiniyata. If one constantly chants Lord Krishna's holy name, avoiding offenses against the name, then surely one will achieve the same result as Uddhava. Uddhava was not interested in so-called Brahman realization, but rather he wanted to go on drinking the maddening nectar of the beautiful smiling of the Lord's moon-like face. 47. Yeah, there's a comment by Vishnu. Naked sages attain your abode called Brahman by jnana and vairagya. Krishna said to Arjuna, Tat param paramam brahma sarva vibhajate jagat mamaiva tat jnanam tejo gyatum arhasi bharata. The Supreme Brahman illuminates the whole universe, so Arjuna, understand that that is my condensed light. It's from the Harivanks. Such sages who perform these type of austerities and are completely renounced, they go to that light, Vishnu says. Let them go there. But we don't want to go there. We remain intoxicated with drinking the nectar of the sweet smile on your moon-like face. Let them go there if they want to. Next. O greatest of mystics, although we are conditioned souls wandering on the path of fruitive activities, fruit of work, we will certainly cross beyond the darkness of this material world simply by hearing about your lordship and the association of your devotees. Thus we are always remembering and glorifying the wonderful things you do and the wonderful things you say. We ecstatically recall your amorous pastimes with your confidential conjugal devotees and how you boldly smile and move about while engaged in such youthful pastimes. My dear Lord, your loving pastimes are bewilderingly similar to the activities of ordinary people within this material world. So this is Uddhava. And keep this in mind. Keep these points that Krishna is, that Uddhava's, because his words are describing his mentality. So keep his mentality in mind when we hear the Uddhava Gita. Because Krishna, again, is going to tell Uddhava so many things, but really, he will tie up the entire Vedic culture, all the processes in the Vedic culture, and really, he will bring them to the point of bhakti. And he will show that, as Uddhava has already seen, because Krishna, practically as soon as he left Vrindavan, he sent Uddhava to back to Braja. Why? There are many reasons. He wanted to console the residents of Vrindavan. He sent so many messages to them. But also, he wanted Uddhava to associate with the Braja Gopis. Because their love was so superior to anything that Uddhava had ever seen or heard of, because Uddhava was thinking of himself the topmost devotee. But when he got to Braja, because he, amongst the Yadavas, he's the topmost devotee. But when he got to Braja, he saw devotion on such a completely different level. And only Rohini Devi in Dwarka had seen the love of the residents of Vrindavan. And there were certain things that Krishna couldn't speak to Rohini Devi about. And why? Because she was mother. And he couldn't speak to his mother about the love of the Brajagopis for him. So he needed a very confidential friend who understood on this level about what was going on in Braja between Krishna and the Gopis, and therefore Krishna sent Uddhava there to become amazed by the love of the Gopis for Krishna, so Krishna would also have someone to speak to. And therefore, it's me who's not working, I fear. It does. There's a tactical problem. Because if I pull the microphone forward so I don't have to lean forward, if I pull it here, then I can't see the book. And if I lean forward and speak into the microphone after an hour or so, oh. So I suggest a solution to this, that at some point we get a larger table so we could have everything in one full concept. Anyway, that's my excuse. But I'll do it. Keep reminding me. We'll remember to do it. So, Vishwanath says, your great devotees do not seek to cross over Maya as a result of their bhakti. As a result of their bhakti, their desire isn't to cross over Maya. That's not what they want. But we are not like those great devotees. How can we be so confident? Out of humility, Uddhava shows that he also desires to cross over Maya. 2 indicates a different subject. Though we are servants in Dasyaras, taking assistance of Sakyaras, we do not desire to practice Gyan, even though you order us. And he will order us. He will order Uddhava to do that, and Uddhava won't do it. We will cross Maya with your devotees who have similar nature as us. We will not cross with the naked sages. What is the method? Crossing the darkness of Maya is easy by the light from your Sudarshan chakra in the form of remembering and glorifying your pastimes. So this is our process. This is kirtan. And this is the great need of the world. Something so spiritual to talk about, to speak about, that the consciousnesses of everyone in the world will be absorbed in talking about Krishna, hearing about Krishna and talking about Krishna. Otherwise, what fills the consciousness of the people of the world? Of course, not the devotees. Just mundane things that entangle us further in the world of birth and death. At least you could hear it. So we're moving forward. At least that. Well, there's no more explanation of it here, but the Sudarshan Chakra is saying, crossing the darkness of Maya is made easy by the light from your Sudarshan Chakra in the form of remembering and glorifying your pastimes. So there's not really any more mention than that, but the Sudarshan Chakra gives light. And Sudarshan Chakra is also what? Time. So for the non-devotees, that time and the chakra kills everyone. And for the devotees, the time and light is equal to remembering and glorifying Krishna's pastimes, which is enlightenment. That's my on-the-spot speculatory explanation. Because for the devotees, time gives us time to mature in our devotion in this material world. This is the purpose of the material world, because the non-devotees aren't in an awkward position in the material world. Why aren't they in an awkward position? Because they just are where they want to be, just to enjoy as much as they can. So they're not in a difficult position. And the pure devotees aren't in a difficult position, because even though they appear to be in the material world, they're actually in the spiritual world. They're with Krishna. They're under Krishna's protection. Even if they're not fully mature, they're under Krishna's protection. And they're and they're moving forward. But the lower devotees are in the awkward position, especially if we understand that they haven't achieved prema yet, or bhava. Why are they in an awkward position? Because they don't want to be in the material world, and they're not qualified for the spiritual world. So they're wobi hair, wobi nahi hair. So it is very awkward. That means, can anyone understand my Hindi? What does it mean? No one can understand. Neither this nor that. Yeah, something like that. Yeah? So we're neither in the spiritual world nor in the material world. So time is meant for us to mature and get off of that platform and be in the spiritual world, to fully take shelter of Krishna. And the process is given here by the process of hearing and chanting. So time is light, is hearing and chanting. Those three are equated in the verse. Time means hearing and chanting, means the enlightenment of the soul, means removal of darkness, which means we're establishing a relationship with Krishna. So now the final verse in the chapter. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King Parikit, thus addressed. So what did Uddhava say to Krishna in essence? Take me with you. Because
we are bhaktas.
And we cannot tolerate being separate from you. This is what it means to be a devotee. I cannot tolerate being separate from you. So please take me with you. I'm not afraid of the material world. It's not that I want to be with you out of fear of the material world, so that because if I'm in the material world, I'll be back in the world of birth and death. No, I can transcend this material world effortlessly just by taking shelter of Shraganda, Uchista, Vas, Alankara. Just by taking your garments, your garlands, the scents, the ganda, the ornaments, and your prasadam, that is sufficient for me to transcend. I hold on to those so tightly. But yet I cannot tolerate being separate from you. So how is Krishna going to respond to this? His devotee loves him so much. He only wants to be with him. He cannot tolerate being separate from him. Will Krishna take Uddhava back to Godhead immediately with him? So what is he going to tell him to satisfy Uddhava? That's the Uddhava Gita. I'll just read the purport to this verse. According to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the conditioned living entities, that's us, that's me anyway, by their movements, by their laughter, activities, and words, simply bind themselves more and more in material existence. But if they engage in hearing and chanting about the pastimes of the personality of Godhead, the conditioned souls will achieve liberation from the bondage of repeated birth and death. This process of supreme liberation will now be elaborately described by Lord Sri Krishna to his dear most devotee, Sri Uddhava. Okay, thus begin chapter 7 with Krishna's words. Now, it's exactly 12 o'clock, and I just wanted to speak a moment about the afternoon part of the class, because I have an hour presentation. I found it a very interesting video, and it's in response to this verse, especially this verse, that in the prayers of the demigods, the second of the prayers, the first prayer is the seventh verse, and in the seventh verse, the demigods say, that we will dedicate our intelligence, senses, vital air, mind, and power of speech to your lordships. We're everything we have, we are dedicating to you, and we're bowing down to your lotus feet. And then in the eighth verse, they say, O unconquerable Lord, you engage your illusory energy, that's Krishna's Maya Shakti, composed of the three modes, Shibir, Gunamayir, Bhaver, the three modes of nature. What does Krishna do with this? We've heard about this in the third chapter of what is the material nature, the answer to the question of Maharaj Nimi. What is this material world? What is the world of Maya? And the beginning of that was that it starts with it's Krishna's energy. So here, he's saying you engage your illusory energy, that illusory energy of yours, composed of the three modes, same point, to unleash, maintain, and devastate the inconceivable material cosmos that is situated, all of that is situated within you. Now, the word inconceivable material cosmos is very interesting, that short phrase, that this material world is inconceivable from the point of view of a conditioned soul. If we look at the macrocosm of the universe, the totality of existence, we cannot conceive of it. The scientists talk about black holes that with their knowledge, they perceive that there are great black holes in the universe that have infinite density, that matter becomes compressed in it and becomes a singularity and enters into these black holes of existence. And then, what's on the other side of that? It's inconceivable. The material, the greatest of the universe is inconceivable. But if you take anything in this world, it's inconceivable. But it's intricately complicated. But inconceivably complicated too. And the concept that this has all came into existence by chance, just it happened to happen like this, is not believable, actually. Yet, this is how everyone nowadays is taught. And this was the great argument that Prabhupada had against scientists. It wasn't that he didn't like scientists. There's one morning walk where one devotee takes the part of the devotees of Prabhupada's criticizing, said something in criticism of the scientists. Scientists are so fools and rascals, imitating Prabhupada's mood, but not having the depth that Prabhupada had. And then Prabhupada, seeing the superficiality and the imitation, he didn't chastise them, but he said, no, we don't. We give the scientists credit for what they have done. But why do they have to say that there is no God? So that was his point. That through this science, and they have the pride to say, to conclude, that everything is happening spontaneously by chance, and that there is no supreme personality or supreme God, there is no controller, there is no... So this mood of Kali, that Kali has put in their consciousness, Kali Yuga, has caused so much havoc in the world, so much havoc to individuals. It has caused so much trouble. And many of us, or most of us, were actually taught these things when we were young, and in school, evolutionary theory. Raise your hand if you learned evolutionary theory as if it was reality, if it was a fact when you grew up. Even you, in India. Was it taught to you as a theory?
Because
Or was it taught to you as this is the truth? Who learned it as a theory? This is a possible explanation of reality. You did? Who was taught this is how everything occurs in the world? That's how I grew up, certainly, thinking that.
Have a little doubt.
Yeah, but that's when you're 60 years old. But when you're 8 years old, first of all, you haven't heard it 10 times and changed ways. And what you hear when you're 8, you believe, you know, because that's the consciousness is soft. So anyway, this was very that I thought, and then this came up to show that there is no other explanation than that there is a intelligence person design behind these things. So we'll watch it. Hopefully, the room can be dark enough that we can even see it as we watch it. Okay, I just wanted to read one quotation from Srila Prabhupada, and the short quotation. Then at the end I'll read two more short quotations. This is a lecture, 1973 in London. Parasya shaktir vividaiva shriyate natasya karyam. This is Vedic injunction. Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. God has nothing to do with his hands and legs. He is so powerful that he has got so many energies. Just like a big man, he does not do anything with his hands, but he has got so many assistants. As soon as he wants to do something, immediately it is done. It is not possible for an ordinary human being. How much energy is in stock of Krishna and how he can perform everything perfectly. Swabhavika janak bala kriya cha. Everything comes out nicely. So much energy is there, inconceivable energy. Now, does anyone remember anything of what I read, or is already his mind is on the, of course, when it's the screen is there, especially a computer screen.
So much energy, just as a big man doesn't do anything himself.
The question was from verse 15. And Krishna talks
15 of what book?
That same chapter. It was yesterday. We were reading about Krishna talks about his threefold wheel of time.
Past, present, future.
And in the same way he was talking about the Sudarshan chakra, how it helps make devotees on the progress.
That was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment, by the way. About the Sudarshan chakra.
Okay. But this was part of the translation.
About the three phases of time.
Threefold wheel of time.
Yeah, and in the purport it said past, present, future, I think. For the non-devotees, time is one thing.
Yeah.
And for the devotees, time is something else. Yes. It's light for the devotees because he matures in time if he chants properly, etc., and follows the process. For the non-devotees, time means kalosmin lokachaya krit. So Krishna has inconceivable energies. Now, I'll read two more short quotations at the end. Control every living entity. As the threefold wheel of time, you diminish all things by imperceptible action. Past, present, and future. Because certain things are increased in the future, in the present, from the past to the present, certain things are decreased. Same thing about going to the future. Okay. I'll just read two short quotes by Srila Prabhupada and ask you what you think. And tell you one impression that I had from looking for some quotations by Prabhupada. So, Prabhupada spoke in Mayapur. He said, Krishna has got multi-potencies we cannot imagine, inconceivable potencies. So the whole universe is manifestation of his potencies. So his energies are acting so nicely that everything is coming in front as if automatically done. But it is not automatically done. This is foolishness. To understand that nature is working automatically is foolishness. The nature is working under the direction of Krishna. That is real understanding. Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Satcharacharan. At the present moment, the so-called scientists, philosophers, they are simply studying the workings of the material nature. But they do not know that behind this material nature, the real powerful is there. Just like we are enjoying the electric light, electric power. But as soon as it has failed from the powerhouse, everything stopped. Similarly, the real power is Krishna. He is powerful, Shaktiman. When he desires, there's creation, this material manifestation. And when he winds up, everything is finished. That is the way. And then a purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita Adilila 96. In an honest search for truth, we must admit that his powers are inconceivable to our tiny brains. The exploration of space has demanded the work of the greatest scientists of the world. Yet there are countless problems regarding even fundamental knowledge of the material creation that bewilder scientists who confront them. Such material knowledge is far removed from the spiritual nature, and therefore the acts and arrangements of the absolute truth are, beyond all doubts, inconceivable. So when I looked up a few words in the Veda base, like inconceivable and material and scientists, and just to put together these few quotations, what I saw that Prabhupada emphasized more than anything else, not like the scientist who said, because there is rational design, obviously, therefore we can find the pieces and put the puzzles together, and they use their brains in that way. But Prabhupada pointed us towards the person who has the inconceivable energies. He pointed us away from understanding the material nature, but understanding the inconceivable person who plays with cows in Vrindavan and wanders around without his shoes, and he plays his flute and attracts all living entities. He pointed us towards developing a relationship with the designer of this insignificant material world as the purpose of our life. Okay, thank you. So again, that was in relationship, that video was presented in relationship with, you engage your illusory energy composed of the three modes to unleash, maintain, and devastate the inconceivable cosmic manifest cosmos. And this is all going on within your very self. Okay, what did you think of that? And this.
Denying this evidence requires very strong moral motivation.
Immoral motivation or moral? Yeah. You have to be very, very determined. Yes, good point. Any other points that you've noted from seeing this?
Or are they put down?
They're definitely put down, but their influence is there too. They fight over these points in the political arena. In the United States, whether evolution should be taught as one possible alternative amongst other alternatives, and the other alternative is intelligent design. And so far, they're losing, I think. but because they have some strong arguments, maybe they won't lose forever. Any other thoughts or conclusions after seeing this?
I think these are just theories. They have not produced life yet by any mechanism yet. I mean, they're just explaining...
What, evolution or intelligent design?
By these designs, I mean, these are just theories. They cannot produce life by these machines.
No. The point was something different. The point was that when there are such complex things going on, There has to be intelligence behind it. It can't go on by chance or natural selection. There has to be intelligence behind it. So they're not saying that they're the intelligence, but really they're saying that God is the intelligence behind it. And to recognize that there's a great intelligence behind the creation doesn't mean that you have to produce it. You can be humble and say the intelligence is far greater than my ability, and that's the Supreme Lord. So their inclination is more in that way.
But they don't dare say anything about...
No, they do, but not in this video. What they're trying to do is separate it. He made the point there. Separate, they said it has metaphysical implications.
But not presumptions.
Yeah, it's not dependent on that, but you should think about these things. They don't say it directly. They're trying to separate the two points, that this means there must be a God, but they're saying this does seem to point to an intelligent designer behind these things, doesn't it?
Maybe they use the one word, the supreme intelligence.
Yeah.
That's
what they want to say, of course. But maybe all of them, looked like one of them might not have been, might be such a jnani that through his looking at microbiotic organisms at Dean Kenyon, that he's become more theistical, that he can't believe through his jnani-like intelligence that these things can be produced by chance. It comes to the point of saying there must be intelligence behind it. And this is done with Krishna's just nothing. Mama Angsa Tejo Sambhava, this is like nothing. So how intelligent? It's not like he's sitting there all day long in the laboratory trying to figure out amazing ways. He's too busy for that. So this is just nothing for him. Mama Angsa Tejo Sambhava. So how intelligent this Krishna is. So Brahma, the most intelligent person, his conclusion is that there's so much intelligence that I can't even guess of how intelligent Krishna is, God is. That's his conclusion. There's so much a vast difference between his intellectual capacity and mine, and his potency in mind, that I don't even bother trying to think about it. Let other people say they can say something about what God is. Yes.
Even the ultra presumptuous author of God Delusion admitted that perhaps the origin of life is extraterrestrial.
Yeah, they have anything but God.
It doesn't answer the question because it just moves it one step.
Yeah,
back.
Right.
It doesn't answer.
They came from extraterrestrials. Anything, it's demonic, in other words. And therefore, it's said that in Kali Yuga, some Purana somewhere, but quoted, that in Kali Yuga, the demonic Brahmanas will take, no, the demonic atheists will take their birth as having these Brahminical brains. Okay? So and then you say, yes, superterrestrial, that's Krishna. He's beyond earth. So eventually you get to Krishna anyway if you follow your argument all the way back. Okay, that video we found out was a gift to me from Sarvabhauma Prabhu. Okay, Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, ki jai.
But Brahma ki jai.
The big scientists are humble. The little ones are arrogant.